If you had a tremendous flock, if you didn't have a tremendous flock, then it would only be one. You know what I mean?
You know, like a lot of people.
And if it's a female, then that's something that's it. You know, we're talking about the male, the first male animal. If it's a male, but in that case, that's sanctified. Okay, so you have to bring the bechor to the Beis Hamikdash, and there it is given as a gift to the Kohanim, and they eat it. Okay, so far so good. Okay. What if the bechor has a blemish? Obviously, it cannot be sacrificed. But the Kohen still gets it, but he treats it as an ordinary animal. You understand? Because it belongs to the Kohen. Okay. There are other rules in connection with that. You're not allowed to use the shearing of the wolf, the wool, if it's a lamb, or if it's let's say a calf, you're not allowed to use it as an ox, and so that later on, you know, when it grows, you have to give it to the Kohen. Okay. Now, the rule applies that even today, everywhere, the firstborn animal is a bechor, if it's a bechor, is sanctified. Okay. Problem is, of course, twofold. First of all, what are you going to do with it? You can't give it to a Kohen today, even though technically it should be given to a Kohen, because why? Kohen is not in a state of purity in order to be able to eat it, okay? So the law is that you have to let it graze. You can't shecht it or do anything with it, okay? However, if it develops a permanent blemish, if remember the Torah says that there are certain blemishes disqualify an animal from being a korban, right? So if it develops a permanent blemish, then in that case it could be slaughtered and eaten. Okay, but who is qualified to know the difference between a permanent blemish and one that is only a temporary blemish?
The Rosh Kalusa.
So he wants to know, right, that Yati Bechor is, does he have permission also to declare that the Bechor has a blemish and may be eaten or not? And he said, Yati, yeah, okay, he has my permission for that. Ki Havadoch is Rav the Bavil. When Rav went down to Bavil from Eretz Israel, so Amalei Rabbi Chiyah the Rebbe, so Rabbi Chiyah said to Rebbe, Ben Achoysi Yerid Lubavil. He says, my sister's son is going down to Babylonia. Yore? Yeah, Yore. Yodin? Yeah, absolutely. Yodin? Of course. Yati Bechoyres? Al Yatir. He can't. Maishnor lemar de kokori ben ochi. Maishnor lemar de kokori ben ochi. First of all, what is the difference? Why is one, he said, he's my brothers, and the other one says my sisters? So, I mean, to us, we're not so surprised about that. But they have all that tonight is the 28th of May in the year 2008, I think. And we are continuing now with Sanhedrin Daf Hei Amud Beis. Okay, the Ibar Sebo, and if you wish, is another explanation why they use the word brother and sister. Al Shem Chachmose, the reason being that Rav was so great a Talmud Chachim that this is the reason why they use the word sister in connection with it. Dichsiv, because we need a pasuk in order to explain that. This is a pasuk, of course, that we have in Mishlei, in the book of Proverbs, where it says, Emor la chochma achos at. Achosiat, right. Yeah. So, say unto wisdom, you are my sister. So, in other words, because he was a great Talmud Chochem, even greater than Rav Chodo, right? So therefore they said, not only, you know, that they come from the same father, but he also had the advantage of having wisdom, greater wisdom, which is considered like a sister. Okay. All right, Sadrash. But now we get back to the question. Why, in the first case, did it say Yati Bechoros? In the case of Rabbi Bechoros, they said he is permitted to examine the firstborn and, if necessary, give permission, right? And in the case of Rabbi, it says Al Yatir. My Tama, what's the reason? So we say, Ilema Mishab Delay Chakim, are we to say that Rav was not a great Talmud Chakim? Hokamin and the Chakim Tuba, here we said that he's a very great scholar.
Right.
So Ela Mishum, but the reason is, first of all, the law, and we were to say, Ela Mishum, the law Bakir Ben Bume, maybe you'll say that Rav may have been a very great scholar, but he was not a Boki, as we would say. In other words, he was not an expert in blemishes. Boki is another word, I don't know if you're familiar with. Boki is somebody who is an expert, knowledge of Torah and so on, but is an expert in whatever field.
Yeah.
I mean, just as we've learned the word Mumcha tonight, so Boki is another word.
Yeah.
Here it says Boki, it's an Aramaic version, but in modern Hebrew it's Boki, okay? Somebody is a Boki Bishas, for example. He is a great scholar. He knows the whole Gemara from beginning to end. So, right. So, but it could be even in other areas too that we use the words Mumcha or Boki in order to, to signify expertise. Okay? So, are we to imply that he is no expert when it comes to these? The Homar. Rav, didn't Rav say that Shmoina Osa Chodoshim Godalti Yitzu Roa Behema? I spent, he says, 18 months living with a shepherd of Behemoths, Leida Ezebum Kavor Ezebum Over, in order to know which is a permanent blemish and which is a temporary one. So, if that's the case, so why did Rabbi Bachoma get the permission and not Rab? So the answer is, they felt that Rabbi Bachoma needed more publicity. They gave him, he needed more publicity, more of a boost. If he comes to Babylonia and he has this permission, look, obviously he learned it, but not the way Rab did it, okay? But he knew enough, I mean, in order to get by. But they felt. Yeah. But you have to understand, both of them were Yore, right? They were learned enough to teach Torah, okay? Both of them were Yodin. They were learned enough in order to be able to serve as, as judges and all kinds of questions and so on and so forth, right? So, but at the same time, the people of Babylonia would have greater respect for Rabbi Bachoma if they know that he is a great, that he knows also, he's an expert in being able to tell whether the blemishes are permanent or transient. Okay?
So did Rob.
Yeah. But the point is, who needed more of a boost as far as reputation is concerned? Rav already had a reputation that was famous not only in Eretz Israel but also in Babylonia. By the way, Rav was born in Babylonia, but he went to Eretz Israel in order to learn, and then he came back again. But he had already, his reputation had already preceded him, so he had it. He didn't need it in order to get that boost.
So why did Rav? You're talking about Rav,
right?
So in other words,
He needed an extra covet. This is what it says. The chalek covet. They give him more covet over there.
Put it equal with Rav.
Right. The people in Babylonia.
But Rav didn't get the smicha, though.
He didn't get it. He got smicha, but not smicha for Mata Bechoros. Correct. Okay. Now we come to that reason. Okay. The Hebrew is Emo, and if you wish, there's another explanation. Mishem HaGofei. For the very reason the Rav Boki B'mumi Tfei, that he was so expert in blemishes, the Shorei Mumi, that he knew how to permit blemishes, the Lo Yadei Inshe, that other people didn't know. In other words, he was such a great scholar that they knew.
Rav.
The Amre, and so people would say, right, Tihai Gabdish or Rav. Oh, I know, something like this, Rav already gave permission, right? The osu mishrei b'moiver. And as a result, they would come, the result would be that they would give permission for a transitory or a transient mum, you know, a blemish,
yeah,
when in reality it was the wrong decision. So, in other words, he was such an expert, okay, right, that he knew the very fine points. The average person doesn't know all those fine points. But the average person says, if he could do it, then it must be right. And so therefore, if they don't know what is behind Rob's reasoning, they don't know it. Yeah, but other rabbis would come along, and they would be given, they would be matter things that in reality they had no right to be matter. You understand? Because Rav knew the fine points of the law, and they didn't.
Okay.
Look,
right,
you have a similar problem today. I don't have to tell you. How many conservative rabbis today have taken the trouble to sit down and to learn Jewish law?
We're not talking about conservative law, we're talking about Rav and Rava.
Correct.
So don't compare it to the conservative rabbis.
No, you don't understand.
I understand.
The average person who has learned, he knows only on the basis that he knows that Rav permitted such and such a case. But does he know why Rav permitted such and such a case? So that he could apply it. You see, that's a different story. You have to know why the permission was given.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, you know, not everybody is aware of these.
So what happens, they took it as a precedent
right.
that allowed them to do things that really were not
right. No, that's correct.
They used this as a precedent.
Right, exactly. That's what he was afraid of.
But that's not Rob's fault.
I didn't say it's Rob's fault, but they're explaining why Rabbi decided not to give him permission to be
Matar,
because he didn't want that people would be misled into thinking, you know.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, that's specious reasoning, that's basic, because what is the purpose
Yes.
And that's the purpose of
yes. But the point is, I mean, will other people come to make a mistake because of the fact that they don't know what's behind Rav's reasoning? You see, that's the point. They don't know the fine points that Rav did.
I understand that.
All
but
right.
That,
no.
But that doesn't make it right.
But you can apply it to a million cases
right
today. You can apply
it
to a million
Rav
cases
the,
a
Rav,
day.
Rav the speaker.
Yeah.
You can make that argument.
Yeah, but I mean, they want to really be sure, you know, that people are not going to make mistakes. And we'll see. We have another case coming up right now. Okay, so
they don't overcome that. Then they don't overcome that.
They don't overcome what?
That kind of reasoning that the people may make a mistake.
No, it's just this is an alternative reasoning that they give. Well, your opinion, I think it's a very smart one, because
no,
I've seen too many rabbis who never learned and they're out giving decisions.
But that's not it. That has no reason for not giving Rav the permission.
Aye. Yeah, unfortunately, he's dead 2,000 years, so we can't take the case to the appeal.
Doctor,
there is a distinction between a rabbi and a conservative rabbi who is unlearned, taking upon himself or herself the ability to make decisions that they don't have the capacity to make.
Yeah.
Well,
all right, but I want to tell you also that even Orthodox Rabbanim very often find themselves in a quandary and they have to go to other people they consider greater authorities than they are. Remember they said that the modern smicha has what terminology? Yora yora, and yodin yodin, and so on. But, each. So yora yora means, that you know how to teach Torah, and you can decide what we call issa v'heter. In other words, things that what is permitted, what's not. Okay? That's what yora yora implies. So the Gemara asks a very simple question. It says, Igomir, Rishus HaLomeli. Look, if he's studied it, he learns it, so why does he need permission in order to serve as a judge, right?
Yeah.
So they say, lovingly the Mishka, why does he need it? So they say, Mishum Maisa, Shehoya, it's because of a certain event that happened, the Tanya, as we've learned. It says, Pam Achas, Holach Rabbi Limokimecha. Rabbi went to a certain place. And he saw that the people in that particular place, they were kneading their dough in a state of tuma. Remember in the old days, if you wanted to be very careful, so you had to make sure, that everything was in tara, not tuma. Okay? And he saw that they were doing it in tuma. So Omar Lahem, so he said to them, Ma Tebegablim is a Sechabituba, how come you're doing this? So Amulor said, he said, Talmud Echod Bolakan, he says, Talmud Chokim came over here, the Horolonu, and he said to us, May Bitsim Ein Machshirin. Okay, it says that water, which is Bitsim,
marsh water,
I'll come to it in 1 second. Ein machshirin, they did not prepare the ground to become tomei. For something to become tomei, it needs water. Okay, this is what we learned in Vayikra, Sefer Vayikra. Okay, it needs water in order to become tomei. So that's what they call hechsher. It has nothing to do with making kashrus.
What is it called?
It's a different. Machshir means to be machshir in this particular.
Machshir.
The word, in other words, can have all kinds of meanings, okay? Machshir can mean that you say that it's kosher. It means perfectly all right, right? A rabba machshir, right? Rabbi Hyman is a rabba machshir, okay? But machshir also, in the language of the Gemara, implies that it leads to tuma. It leads to tuma. Okay? Hopefully. Yes, it prepares for tuma. It's what makshir means. Lakshir, sakarka, means, for example, to prepare the ground for something or other. You understand? You have to, words in Hebrew have all kinds of meanings depending upon their context. Okay? Yeah, right. But, in order to know the Hebrew language well, you really have to get into the spirit of it. And, we're dealing with a language which began thousands of years ago in the Bible. And even there, we have to understand there are some difficult passages in the Bible as to what the meaning of words are and things like that. And it's continued again, and in the time of the Mishnah, an entirely new type of Hebrew language came into existence, because it was under the influence to a certain extent of Aramaic, the addition of many Greek words, some Latin words, and things like that, and so on. And this continued, through the Middle Ages. A new vocabulary was created for Jewish philosophy, for example, the Rambam, and so terms that he was using. So, and now, of course, we have modern Hebrew, which began, let's say, at the end of the 19th century. But at the same time, modern Hebrew, the way it's used today in Eretz Yisrael, is an outgrowth of all these things all combined. So under those circumstances, words have changed meaning, words have different meaning according to different contexts and things like that. To know Hebrew well really requires years of study. It's not to know just, how to order a cup of coffee in Hebrew, though that's also important.
According to the note I'm reading here, Rabbi Ospol says that they were using tummy utensils. And the reason they were using tummy utensils is because he said that someone had told them that the marsh water, which they told by a scholar, would not
You have to understand. Here's the answer. All right. I said they bit him. Okay, it's the way I sounded it. Okay, I don't know whether he has maybe saw him or what, but maybe bitsim is really what it should have. Okay, bitsim in Hebrew is a swamp.
Swamp.
Right, but as we'll see in a moment, this scholar who came to them didn't say bitsim. What did he say? He said maybe
bitsim. Bitsim, eggs.
Eggs. In other words, he had told them that if you use eggs in order to mix your dough, then that won't make it tummy. But they misunderstood, and they thought that he said may bitsim, which means swamp water is perfectly okay.
So what you're saying here is a matter of term.
Right. They misunderstood what he said. Right. Okay. I mean, between bitsim and bitsim, there isn't that much difference, if you mispronounce it, that's all. Maybe he talked fast, huh?
But when you're talking, they don't...
Marsh water...
Right.
Another swamp water was
Okay. And it says, for whom may bitsim Dorish? He had said to them, bitsim, right?
Bitsim.
The yin who is sober, but they said, may bitsim. They were under the opinion that he said swamp water, Kalmar. The toe. And they made a mistake. And now, also in another case, where it says, May Carmion, May Fega, Psulin, Mipne, Shehain, May Bitsim.